Well, this is a tough problem. That might be the only thing all people will agree about. Well, maybe not. Maybe people will look at this. But I think probably a majority of these people agree with that. And perhaps because of that, there are a variety of approaches that people have taken to try to understand it. And I would think it's fair to say that these approaches are still exploratory. People try stuff, see what's good about it, what's bad about it. And so there are a lot of these approaches, and I don't think I can give you a survey of them. Let me try to give a flavor for, you know, sort of strategies, if you will. First, well, one might try to look and guess or make special situations where you think a few degrees of freedom in your system kind of are dominant and analyze those degrees of freedom well and hope that you don't have to do everything else well. What we've heard about BKL singularities would be a suggestion of this strategy, although we don't know yet how to implement that, for instance, in string theory. Other examples of this strategy is the work that Gibbon and collaborators have engaged in, where you think that there's some kind of instability, it's called tachyon instability, that really runs the dynamic. If you treat that well, that's good enough. And I'm happy to hear that Gibbon will give a seminar about this stuff, so that's all I'm going to say about it. So, in the interest of overview, that's all you're going to hear from me about that. But that's an example of this strategy. Now, I have to say that this problem with space-like singularities scares me. I don't really have an intuition at it at all. I guess it's because I live in a world where time seems to be moving along. I don't have any intuition at all about what it would be like for time to stop. And so kind of the approaches that I've been thinking about and I look at is to somehow take advantage of the fact that in string theory we seem to have sort of special cases where we have a complete list of all the degrees of freedom and some well-posed dynamic for all those degrees of freedom. And the hope would be to embed certain simple examples of space-like singularities in these systems. And if we can do that, then, well, assuming that we can do some analysis, we're pretty sure we haven't forgotten and left out some important effects. Well, that's part two, but those are the kind of approaches that I'm going to talk about today. And so the kinds of special cases in string theory where we think we have a handle on complete non-perturbative descriptions, I guess historically they go under a number of names. There's this old matrix model, and there's matrix theory, and then there's the ADS-CFT framework. And we now understand that, in fact, it's a mathematical right, that the 1 and 2 are contained in 3. But these are really just special cases of this general framework. These things have some desirable properties, in particular old matrix theory models. They describe low-dimensional worlds, particular two-dimensional worlds. And their dynamics is under tremendous analytic control. You can really calculate a lot of things. But unfortunately, in two dimensions, gravitational dynamics is rather impoverished. Maybe not completely impoverished. And I think more serious, all of the curvatures and light scales are of order the string scale. So interpreting these worlds that you make is difficult and ambiguous. So I'm not going to talk about the work that's going on today. You can see that I'm probably narrowing this overview. And matrix theory, well, as far as I can tell, there's nothing qualitatively new you can say about this question in matrix theory that you can't address in the canonical examples of ADS-CFT.
In the old matrix theory, when you say there are a lot of
string,
is it like 100 times string length, or is it really one?
It's like one.
It's like one.
It's like one. Square root of two. There's no controllable parameter to make the ratio large. That's the.
Just put it in your pocket.
So should I repeat everything I've said? Is that the answer?
All right. So
All right, so despite what I have to admit is a sentimental attachment to the first and the second one, I'm going to focus on here. And so maybe a more accurate title for what I'm going to talk about is something like Approaches to Space-like Singularities. I guess that... I hadn't really noticed that before. ADS-CFT. Now, further sort of invoking this funneling phenomenon, a very interesting set of ideas is along these lines have been pursued by Thomas Hertog and Gary Horowitz, but I understand that Thomas is going to talk about this. So I'm not going to say anything about that either. So maybe I think the more accurate title of this talk is Two Approaches to, what is this again? Space-like Singularities.
In the theme of this workshop is talking for each other.
I wish you had told me that, but I'm not going to do that. Well, I guess I'm going to engage in that in a bit, but... All right. Okay, so let me just remind you, or the few of you that don't know about this, what the kind of canonical example of ADS-CFT is that is probably the best controlled and the best understood of these precise non-perturbative formulations of quantum gravity. And that's where you try to describe string theory in a super selection sector that on average has a geometry that looks like anti-de Sitter space in five dimensions across a five sphere. And this, as you all knew, is dual to some CFT, which in this case is a super Yang-Mills theory that lives in four dimensions. And the picture is you have some ball. The boundary of this ball is an S3. It evolves in time. And the interior of this ball, the radius is indexed by a coordinate r, and this is some picture of anti-de Sitter space. The super Yang-Mills theory, which is the conformal field theory of the name, that means the super Yang-Mills theory has no scale in four dimensions, lives on this boundary. So you imagine coding this gauge theory on the boundary of this ball, and something about the dynamics of the gauge theory tells you what's happening in the interior of the ball, roughly as you vary the scale of phenomena that corresponds to moving in and out.
Yeah. Can I come back to the thing that you said, that 1 and 2 are contained in 3?
Yes.
So the fact that you are restricted to ADS type backgrounds is kind of restrictive.
Yeah.
I didn't see that in 1 and 2.
Well, right. So there are limits of this. When I said the ADS-CFT framework, okay, what that really means is you're taking some brains, okay, and then taking some kind of limit of the brains to describe a geometry. So you can imagine situations where the field theory, if you will, doesn't have a non-trivial fixed point. You flow to some kind of trivial fixed point, and then you wouldn't be describing a finite radius ADS space. Or you can imagine, as matrix theory does, taking the radius of the ADS space and blowing it up to infinity. So these are various limiting cases of this framework. The old matrix models? Yes. Yeah. And that was first comprehensively understood, what was it, a couple years ago by McGreevy, Verlinde, and a whole host of people after that. You can find in these two-dimensional non-critical theories of gravity D-brains. And you take a stack of them together, and you produce this matrix model as the dynamics of the D-brains.
Well, you can do completely without ADS. Seems to be a big advantage from the point of view of
Kazan.
It's still not
the point.
No, it's
right, but having an approach which is restricted.
They have the problems of ADS-CFT, you know, the boundary, and the lower dimensions. So.
Right.
I wouldn't say it's an
advantage. Well, the real advantage here is you have the dynamics of the analog field theory under complete control. This matrix quantum mechanics, you can calculate everything, well, I'd say a lot about. Okay, and so certain more exotic phenomena that are harder to control in the higher dimensional theory you examine. And so you can examine quite non-trivial kinds of motions of these fermions, and people have speculated that they're related. In, I mean, the title of some of the papers that have come after, called Matrix Cosmology, Now, whether or not is the proper interpretation of these exotic things is as a cosmology is hard to decide, basically because of this interpretational problem. Interpreting them as a space-time is confusing because everything is highly curved. The dilaton varies on short length scales. Okay. But at the end of the day, these things all have a nice time that evolves forever. So if time is going to stop, it's going to have to be some other kind of time than the time at your disposal. Okay. Well, I don't mean to suggest there's nothing to be learned. It's just that the interpretational issues are serious. So, I mean, in roughly speaking, I would say these are a situation where you have the answers, and the question is to figure out what the question that they are answering is.
Again, also the fact that time doesn't stop. Time runs and runs simply
because of it.
Right.
An advantage. An advantage because of the way the world looks?
Yeah, I think you might have, from the interpretational point of view.
Okay. Well, that, you're right. It may be. I
won't put it down as a disadvantage.
Okay. I won't put it down as a disadvantage. Are there any other questions? What is Gary? What are the rules? The rules is or we can go. I have a plane to catch. I guess you and I. You have a plane to catch. At last time I was here, I started with this too, right? But this time, yeah. We have to leave here at 4:45 or something.
Okay. I think we should see how it goes. Okay. Feel free to ask questions.
Yeah, do feel free to ask
questions. If necessary, if we're not done at 3 or 3:15, we can take a break and reconvene.
I would say the worst that happens is the two could go to 1, or possibly 2.5. Those are the worst reasonable cases that could happen. Well, I think I foisted that on people last time. I will try not to do that this time.
But this time you don't have eternal
But you know, Dave, one thing I can predict safely is if that happens, Eva will find some clever and insulting title for the second seminar that will incorporate some analog of these notions. I'm willing to bet on that. Any other preparatory remarks? How many people don't, you know, have some reasonable understanding? My guess is even the people that do classical general relativity have probably seen this. Okay, so, well, maybe I should say that if there's something you don't understand, ask. I feel some obligation to be a little bit pedagogical about this. All right. Okay, so there's this setup. This gauge theory lives on the boundary, and the idea is if you compute correlators in the gauge theory, you have some operators at these points, you compute some correlator just using the rules of quantum field theory. This has a well-defined answer because this theory is a well-defined quantum field theory. And on the same token, it defines something in this bulk string theory. It's roughly speaking a source for various kinds of particles or excitations. And so you're computing the dynamics of this source, and you can imagine doing this at different times. You can do scattering. And so from these correlators in this well-defined non-gravitational field theory, you can compute objects that tell you something about gravity. Okay. So again, here we think, and I think I think it's beyond a reasonable doubt, as far as I can tell, that this thing defines a good theory of quantum gravity, and everything we know about it from the gravity side is predicted correctly by this. Well, a lot of things have been checked, and I think now, given the intuitive arguments, everybody expects this to compute everything right, and I'm going to take it as a given that this is a correct description. Yes? Right. Yes? Okay.
Well, it's not clear that you can answer all the questions you'd like to answer about gravity, particularly on scales smaller than the ADS radius.
Well,
I'll register that objection.
Fair enough. Well, that actually is going to be important for what we're going to say, because roughly speaking, one hallmark of something like a singularity is it's local, either in space or time. So being able to localize is very important to being able to address dynamics of singularity. So I guess I'm going to, so you try to use some tools that get beyond that. And so this is actually something that we need to discuss. Do you think there might be some very complicated question that you can answer in the Super Yang-Mills theory that might correspond to that? Or you actually think there is some in principle, obstacle?
I think those are both possibilities.
Okay.
I don't know the ones that there are these local things. It could be that somehow the boundary gauge theory averages out or projects out some of that information. That's one possibility. That or it may be complicated enough to answer that we just have to figure it out.
Okay. So, all right. So I guess maybe we just should keep that in a column. I was going to write something about beyond a reasonable doubt, but as a concession, I won't write it on the board. Okay.
I mean, there's intuition, obviously, in any incomplete result of intuition. That's critical.
You said incomplete?
Yeah. In any incomplete theory, intuition is, of course, a driving force.
Yeah.
I think people who are not actively working with this whole
right.
We are difficult in understanding statements like the one that he has made.
Good.
The reason is because we see some sprinkled results. I mean, it's like taking this board and having sprinkling of points and saying that, well, I understand the whole continuum of this board. And for us, it looks like, you know, I can scout the number of things that I know that we can actually calculate or make sufficiently detailed arguments about. Where general relativity, even on the scale, which is sort of far from Planck scale, has such rich predictions that we don't see any hints of those, so to say. And so I think this is a little bit of a...
Okay, well, this is a little bit aside, but I think actually this is a much more important point to discuss than some of the concrete things. So maybe let's get into this now. Okay, so this is a central tool, or these special cases, but I would say this is a central tool that many of us use to address this question. So I guess if the tool is invalid, then we're in trouble.
We don't have the kind of intuition you have, so we would like to understand that.
Right. Okay, so I think maybe it would be important to talk briefly about why we're so confident that this describes. Okay, so let me now try to give what are the best arguments. Yeah, so there's an I would say that it's not just a matter of checking random things that agree. It, to my own taste, and I guess I may let me make sure I get this accurate. There's certainly enough experts to correct me if I say something that's incorrect, or if I say something incorrect to dispute it. But there's an intuition where you imagine these objects that live in string theory as defined, sort of from gravity, is not a complete. We have a perturbation expansion. We can talk about certain non-perturbative objects. Okay, we can define solitons. One of the most interesting of those non-perturbative objects is the thing Joe Polchinski taught us about, a D-brain, which is a kind of soliton that usually solitons make a big deformation of background fields. These D-brains are both heavy, they don't move, but they're light, and so they don't make much of a back reaction. So you can imagine sitting them in a reference space and they don't perturb it. In some sense, they're very small, so they're the best of all worlds in many ways. Okay, and you can imagine studying stacks of these D-brains, and they open strings join them, and we can study the dynamics using our tools from perturbative string theory. And when these brains get close together, much closer than the string scale, the only thing that's relevant to the dynamics is the straightest of stretched strings. A wiggle, which is what strings do, turns out to be much more massive than this unwiggling stretched string. So when these brains get close together, there is a sector of very low energy excitations. Okay, and there are various arguments, both from the gravity side and from other sides that I'll mention, that this sector is a closed, self-consistent sector. Okay, and what that sector is a gauge theory. If you have n such D brains, you have great strings linking any of the. So you have something with two, if these things are labeled by an index A, you have fields with two indices, A and B, so the things are described by a matrix. This is a piece of space evolving in time. You can have these degrees of freedom anywhere on the brain, so you have something that's a function of space and time with matrices, and everything is local, so what else can it be but a quantum field theory of matrices? Okay, and string in a maximally supersymmetric theory, you know, if you have, let's say, scalars, you have everything up to gauge fields. Okay, so you really have no choice but for this to be a gauge theory with maximal supersymmetry, let's say, in 3 plus 1 dimensions, of matrices. And if you have n such brains, it's got to be roughly an SUN super Yang-Mills theory. Okay, so I think there are
Yeah, so that's one sector of theory. But for example, you know, if you open some standard textbook of relativity, this is not the sector anyone talks about.
Right. So that's this is the first thing, that the sector lives there. And then the question is, what is this also describing? So now for a minute, let's forget about these n squared. Why am I doing this? I'm not sure. I'm the least qualified person in this room to do this, but all right. Maybe that's why I should be. That's why I should be doing it. Right. Okay. I get the idea. The hyenas pick on the wounded animal. I'm slow, but not that slow. Okay. All right. So if you now think about, from the point of view of, let's say, gravity, these things are a source of gravity. They're rather weak. But when the number of brains get very large, they do significantly deform the background. And in fact, what they deform this background to, I'm not sure I can draw this. This is flat space. They deform it into some kind of throat. And the geometry down here is anti-de Sitter, and I guess there's a sphere crossing this in the simplest case. Okay, and so if you accept these other rules of computation, this thing is describing the gravity, this gravity and its fluctuations of an anti-de Sitter space with some faraway flat space going here. So on the one hand, you have a valid description in terms of a gauge theory. On the other hand, you have a valid description in terms of gravity. Okay, and when you check the regime in which you want these excited excitations to decouple, or from this side, the decoupling of this throat from this flat region, there's a simultaneous region of validity. Okay? So therefore, gravity in this throat, that description is equally valid. What that means roughly is when n gets very large, the curvatures here are small. Okay? In the same time that this gauge theory, that these excited strings are not important for the dynamics, that they decouple. So you have Super-Yang-Mills theory and supergravity simultaneously valid. Okay? And this theory is self-contained and complete by itself, so therefore this must be describing supergravity plus whatever else you need to complete it. So that's the intuition. I would say that's, a physicist's argument, that this thing must work. And then in order to make sure there's not some subtle phenomenon that you're missing, you check it in a few places. Okay, but it's not a question of some magical result that's strange, and you check it a few times.
From a physical perspective,
yeah. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, before ADFC, anti-de Sitter spaces, two series, there are three papers I'm asking you now.
Yes, right.
Including what I wrote, so I have to
know. Yeah, no, I...
it's not central to most of relativity. I mean,
right.
We're interested in a symbolic flat, we're interested in non-infinity, we're interested in gravitational radiation, we're interested in bonding mass, bonding,
right.
et cetera. And all that is just not seem to be absent here.
Wait, what is the absent? I mean, the ADS space is large and nearly flat.
Right.
Most of the things you're interested in, black holes, gravitational radiation, can be present as local phenomena. The one thing it doesn't capture is the cosmological phenomena.
Right.
That's exactly why.
Yeah, and that's true if you can resolve things well. I mean, still small as the ADS streams, which is one.
Exactly. So, for example, when you went to the black hole entropy calculations,
right.
There, the black hole has been large compared to the ADS radius.
In the known calculations, there's no in principle reason why it has to be.
Okay. But I think that we can understand.
Yes, that's correct.
And that is not what we are interested in. That's not the kind of black hole we are interested in.
You can't study the details of the smaller black holes, but the fact that evolution is unitary, for example, all around this.
Right.
The game theory is fairly complex. If you had a large enough computer, you could answer any question even about small black holes.
Matter of faith that you will get answers which are.
Well, I think maybe to be more positive, you should call it an interesting prediction. I mean, so this theory is falsifiable in interesting ways. There's no adjustable parameters. There's no choice about microscopics.
But when you say that we are no doubt that this guy, that's
assuming there's a one-to-one map.
Yeah, there's a one-to-one map.
local phenomena, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's assuming that there's this dictionary which is very developed. And I agree that there are, you know, good, I mean, there are first few things which are already very surprising.
They work out.
Oh, go ahead, Veronica.
But certainly there are indications that you can probe physics inside the bulk on much smaller scales than ADS scale by various techniques. We might not get the precise gravitational field theoretic dual to this, but we can certainly probe the physics.
There are some hints along
with that. But that's pretty
strong.
Please.
Getting to it anyway, but at this point that the observables on just directly the gravity description of an ADS background have the structure of conformal field theory correlators. So going one way, another,
that's a good point.
The derivation of the statement that should be a conformal field theory.
Right.
Going one way.
That's an important point. Let me elaborate slightly on what you're saying. First of all, I think in any theory of quantum gravity that will reduce to Einstein's theory at low energies, you will have, let me call them super selection sectors. You can find a solution that looks like anti-de Sitter space if you have a little bit of matter, some sort, some field, other fields to source it. Okay. There, no fluctuations can take you out of anti-de Sitter space because if it really runs to infinity, this is an infrared question. This is just like when you spontaneously break the symmetry in a magnet or something. You can't go out of that. That's just a question about fluctuations in gravity. So any theory of quantum gravity has to be able to discuss infinite anti-de Sitter space. It may not be the thing that's phenomenologically most appealing, okay, but you have to be able to discuss it. So it is a meeting ground, okay, where different candidate theories of quantum gravity can meet and discuss their results. Okay. And then, as Eva was saying, and I think it's important, on very general grounds, forget about the Super Yang-Mills theory and the string construction. If you imagine taking the correlators of gravitons on the boundary, on very general grounds, those obey the Ward identities of stress tensors in a conformal field theory. The global conformal invariance is just the anti-de Sitter symmetry. Okay? And so, I don't know, what else, is that enough exactly? Do you have local... You can define local fields, and you have the correlators. In any event, I think it's enough on general grounds to say that any theory of quantum gravity will produce the correlators of a conformal field theory. So in some sense, an unbiased way of discussing theories of quantum gravity is to say, well, let's talk in anti-de Sitter space. Just, you know, it's a meeting ground. Okay, it's the watering hole of the animal kingdom. We'll give you our conformal field theory. You give us yours, and we'll compare them and see what different, how they look differently. What's the same about them? What's different about them? And so I think that is an important point, and I think it may provide an unbiased way of discussing these issues. Let me, Ted, your.
I want to ask a question that, from the string theory point of view, probably naive, but it pertains to the issue of the role of all this in studying singularities. So I look at your picture, and I wonder, how many strings are there connecting any two brains? So I imagine your answer must be this: we're talking about a quantum state, and there's some amplitude for any number of strings, and some Hamiltonian has selected for me, has answered that question. Is that right?
That's correct.
But then that's a state. So now I imagine arbitrarily energetic or singular processes.
Right.
And I could imagine just taking one of those brains and ripping all the strings off of it and pulling it away from the rest of the stack.
Excellent question.
And then the effective field theory that you're telling us describes the whole thing, this conformal field theory, I imagine can't possibly describe that process where I've ripped those strings off and pulled a brain away. So...
Oh, but it can.
So this is crucial because I might think a singularity might involve something like that in the string theory.
Yeah.
What do you have to say about that?
Okay. Well, why don't you go ahead, and I'll clean up after you if I have to.
No, I mean, I think we do understand how to describe precisely that process of having separated one brain from a stack of brains. And we can describe that both in the field theory and in the bulk. In the bulk, you can do it because these are like extreme riser Nordstrom black holes. And you know you can superpose extreme horizon orbit black hole, but they're not anywhere at all. There's no force between them. Similarly, there's no force between these brands. So the solution which gives ABS 5 process 5 corresponds to all the brands being at the same point, and it's just an extreme black hole solution, and that's just the sort of metric down the throat that Steve was talking about. But you can also write down a metric where you have sort of, you know, n brains at one point and one brain at some other point. There's a perfectly good solution of the supergravity equations which describe it.
And then do I have two CFTs with different values of n when I've separated them?
Well, then it depends on how you take this decoupling limit. I mean, you can take the decoupling limit in a way that the separation stays relatively small. If you actually make it big and you want to keep them big, then yeah. I would say no, right? Because then each of these are really asymptotically flat solutions and you separate them by some finite amount.
But shouldn't that be a physical process that could happen in the full theory?
Right, the Higgs mechanism. There's a Higgs mechanism from the field theory point of view.
Right, you're going out on the Coulomb branch of the field theory.
It's a Higgs mechanism.
But in particular, in Steve's language, you're changing the superselection sector. You're changing the asymptotic boundary conditions.
So how can that be? I mean,
you just made an elegant argument. That's what you mean.
But wait, let me do it locally.
I mean, when you tell me I did something elegant, I worry. Either one. I worry about both. Actually, eloquent worries me even more. I mean, in fact, there is a system, in the bulk I have a little trouble saying it, but in terms of the gauge theory, if you imagine the gauge theory is on the sphere, then roughly speaking, there's a mass term for these moduli, and you never have to worry about that. An excursion where the brains get pulled infinitely away, that's infinite energy. Okay, so in fact, that decouples that excitation in a certain setup. So in fact, that will never happen in, well, global coordinates, if you will.
So never even at a singularity? I mean, so the gravitational description, things are infinitely weird at the singularity. Can it be that your never happen is exactly going to break down?
Well, yeah, I think you can say if this is a quantum field theory with a Hamiltonian. Energy is conserved. You can never do something that is strictly infinite energy in that conformal field theory. So the quantum field theory will never do it.
Yeah, but that was inferred as an effective field theory. Let me give you an analogy. Consider electron capture in an atom.
Did you say effective field theory?
Yes.
I'm not sure I like that word, but go ahead.
Well, you drew the stack of brains and you talked about the excitations and you said that we can capture all of this by this field theory of matrix value fields.
Right.
And I think about the analogy in a condensed matter system, and that looks like an effective field theory.
No, there's a crucial difference. Well, some effective field theories are, let's say, they need cutoffs. Their answer is not completely well-defined without extra data. This theory is not like that.
Okay.
This theory is complete. Okay, so there's no extra information you have to supply to calculate these quantities.
But let me just pursue my analogy
sure.
a step further. Consider electron capture in an atom with a very high Z nucleus. So I can write down the Schrodinger equation
right.
for the electrons in the Coulomb potential,
yeah.
and it looks
yeah.
like a complete theory.
It does?
And yet, when the charge of the nucleus is great enough, every once in a while an electron disappears into
right.
a new place
right.
where there are degrees of freedom that I didn't take into account.
Yeah, so I would say that theory is not a complete...
So singularity in space-time correspond to something like that in your D-brain picture.
So I think what that would have to mean is that on more careful study, this field theory, okay, would not be a well-defined field theory. There would have to be some high-energy process that actually is not well-behaved, that needs extra information to specify its answer. Okay, so that would be that. And so, and in particular, when you take these lower-dimensional things, they turn into 1+1-dimensional field theories. Our intuition about field theory is that doesn't happen. So you see, one important thing here is we've turned questions about gravity into questions about field theory. Okay? We are much less willing to accept the fact that a field theory that we understand very well, okay, has new additional data required to specify it. That would be the consequence of your remarks. You would be telling us that this field theory, studyable in all different kinds of ways, is incomplete. It's only an effective field theory. There's some kind of cutoff information one has to supply. Okay, that It's not been proven, but I think, well, here I'll use the word, it's beyond a reasonable doubt that that's not the case. Okay. Yeah.
I'm a little bit worried about this idea of using ADS as a watering hole where we can all meet, because from the point of view of classical relativity, a funny property of ADS is that it's not globally hyperbolic. I mean, you can get to infinity in a finite time, you can go back from infinity.
Good.
So if you actually wanted to describe ADS in classical relativity, you would have to add to the Einstein equations some extra information about what comes in from the boundary. It seems like ADS is in some sense pathological from the point of view of general relativity, and so it's not clear even, you know, how to describe it in the classical theory. And so I'm a little bit worried about this notion that, well, okay, on the gravity side we know how to describe ADS, on the field theory side we know how to describe conformal field theories, and let's meet in the middle somewhere, because I'm not even sure that in gravity we know how to describe ADS.
Well, all you're saying is that we need boundary conditions on this finite boundary. And so we just have to meet and agree, you know, that we're going to all use the same boundary conditions.
There must be some natural way of saying what the boundary conditions that string theory likes. What are the words you would use to talk to... Sorry? What did you say?
No, that's not a theory.
what word did you use? Nice?
Energy conserved. We don't want stuff coming in. Yeah. So we want anything that goes out to infinity to bounce back, basically.
So there's some kind of reflecting boundary conditions.
Something like reflecting.
The point of
I wonder if boundary conditions are possible. I don't know how it is. It's any of the magnetic part of the y tensor, z on
that is reflecting,
and that has very many nice properties also, that actually gives you asymptotically anti-reciprocal group.
Yeah, I think we would want that, right? It's a symmetry statement. Is that right? Is it?
Yeah.
We want the vacuum to be conformally invariant. So there should be a symmetry statement on these boundary conditions.
Okay.
Is that? So there is a natural boundary.
Yeah. Is that okay? So. Okay. So that maybe that's the right. The okay. So now the watering hole is still. yes.
So sorry to belabor this, but I think it's a very important point.
Okay.
So I agree with the watering hole comment. We just add the things that you can compute in the ZFT that we're just describing, the correlators, map to an analog of the S matrix on the gravity side.
I guess that's right, yes.
And
well, I'm going to put a little. All right, yes. Go ahead.
Boundary S matrix and whatever it is will define you. Okay. So, and the question is whether you can really again get all of the information you might want from such a boundary S matrix.
That's fair. That's absolutely fair. Okay. And we'll have. I think much of what we'll need to discuss is related to that. It's a matter question of studying probes.
It's not clear.
There's an obvious difference between something that you can calculate and something we have those
values. Okay, but you need to figure out the right kind of question to ask in the book and try to get an answer. And at least some naive attempts to ask certain of those questions can get into trouble. So that could be an issue of this practice, or it could be an issue of principle.
I think you can select a big hand, you can sit at the edge and see what's happening in the I think I've answered some of your technical problems.
I'm actually going to resist. I appreciate what you're doing. This is probably more important though than any single thing I have to say. There's a very strong feeling within this community that we have a precise set of rules represented by this list, and the canonical example being, I guess, this, that we can is a starting point. Okay, that I think informs a lot of the ideas that we're going to talk about. And if there's sort of debate and misunderstanding on that, or at least that's more important I think than anything else, is the belief that in a certain super selection sector, I'm not going to say in a certain background, because it's not a certain background, It's every metric that, in an average sense, looks like this. So every, you know, you just impose symmetry, essentially, that it's got an ADS5 cross S5 symmetry. That in that sector and certain related ones, we have a complete set of rules. Okay? And then we can investigate the consequences of those rules. So it's not a question of saying, let's try these rules. Oh, that's a good set of rules. Let's try those. Oh, that's not so great. Once you have a set of rules, you can then ask for its consequences. Yes?
It seemed like Joe was going to say something very important on this.
No, Joe is assertive that it would be done, but I said...
You have particular objections which I think are not generally... Well, it's a technical point which you've made, which I don't think is generally accepted, which I particularly don't believe is correct. But it's
stuff. Well, so it's only 3 years ago. It's a question of at least one approach to reading off information on scale smallest compared to the ADS radius from the present analog of the S radius. And at least an attempt to do that in a fairly naive way falls flat and struggle, it appears. And so it was suggested another way that it might be done, but that hasn't been worked out.
Okay.
Or another aspect of
Yes. No. I think this is useful. Let's pursue this.
So, first of all, this is a certain selected sector in the sense of quantum field theory.
Well, I would actually say it should be in the sense of. Yeah, I mean, I think if any theory that reduces to Einstein theory will have such a super selection sector. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Just because the small fluctuations can't take you out of the asymptotics.
That is, yeah, I agree.
Okay, so all right, so good. That's common ground.
But this sector, and just for the rest of the thing, is kind of has really this 10 dimensions ADS cross S5.
Right.
Which to us doesn't look very interesting because, I don't mind if this S5 was small. That's why it's really a cosmological radius.
Right.
I think you'll all agree with what I'm saying, but I just want to research. And also it's supersymmetric. And we don't know how to break the supersymmetry here.
Well, but
yeah. As you say,
right.
The state is a mathematical physics problem.
Good. That's right.
But then I do have still one question about the words that you use. Is that mm-hmm. in this case we have a complete understanding how to go back and forth. I didn't think that was true because you really need this dictionary. I will calculate something in the way. And besides what we're talking about now, we don't have the dictionary. And if we had this dictionary, then you would know exactly which calculation to do in order to tell us what happens to gravitational collapse. And we don't have this dictionary. So therefore, right. I do have strong objection against the word that we have complete understanding, unless you can, I'm missing something.
Well, no, I. Your point is well taken, and in fact, that's a very serious. What we have is a what's the right way to say it?
You mean that you have a complete understanding of the gauge theory as a gauge theory.
Right, and how to connect that to various phenomena in gravity we understand partially, but I think there's a strong sense though that we can't add any new degrees of freedom. Now is that we have to make sure. I mean, Ted, you were bothering. Go ahead.
No, I think I agree with almost everything you said. You said we don't know how to break a supersymmetry, but I think we do have ways of breaking supersymmetry. The four poles of the sphere break supersymmetry completely, and then come down to relativity.
Oh, that's what I meant by the thing.
We certainly have non-supersymmetric solutions that we can sort of describe in some sense, the black holes and stuff. So some aspects. So I think I agree, but the dictionary relating this to gravitational question is very important.
No, but the sector that one is talking about, that sector, primarily the supersymmetric sector, and it's inside somehow. Okay, that's what I would like to understand.
Like you can work at very high, take a supersymmetric field theory and you study at very high energy. The supersymmetry is almost not important. I mean, you know, it's, well, if you heat it up to very high temperature, it can look almost like a non-supersymmetric theory. You can study very non-extremal black holes or something. So
okay,
yes.
The point is that somehow there's a dictionary problem, but if that were solved,
right.
Then supersymmetry is not important. Like one should be able to answer even questions what alternative number of two can be nominated to the
state. Some questions. There will be, I mean, you don't have to study things that are manifestly supersymmetric. You have a supersymmetric Hamiltonian.
I mean, like instead of measure zero versus one set of measure one, and it seems to be that the examples one has about making a supersymmetry instead of measure zero, but if you're telling me that none of my intended potential is wrong, there are lots of them that I'll change.
So there are exceptions to make, let's see, if you just look at where the dual two Hamiltonian is not the information of the
Well, first, let's talk about gravitation solution.
That corresponds on the gravitational side, but not specifically.
General linear gravitational waves, all linearized gravitational waves, which are not supersymmetric states, have analogs that we know in the dual
pitch. This is what proof of it.
Right. Yes, so.
I think it's worth saying. The reason we can't study gravitational clash to the end in the dual theory is not because it's not a dictionary, but because we need to do real-time strongly coupled Young-Mills theory. But I mean, I don't think, we know how to map an infalling, star onto the dual field theory. It's just that we can't do the field theory calculation.
No,
we have a formalism to do it.
No, I think that there's a problem of going behind horizons that is serious.
Describing the what things, local observer falling into a black hole can see all the way till the end. That's the kind of problem.
Right.
Anyone just visually set
up. But right. Clarifying this dictionary question just a little bit.
Yes, good.
Which is that there is a stated dictionary which takes a complete set of observables in the field theory and tells you exactly that they correspond to a certain set of highly non-local observables in the gravitational theory associated with things at the boundary, the things that Steve called this graviton S matrix. There's a plausibility argument that those might be a complete set of observables in the gravitational theory. If that's true, then there is a complete dictionary. The trick is to decode those non-local observables in a useful way to extract the kind of local physics you'd like to understand about observers falling into black holes. So there is not a dictionary issue. At the level of defining the correspondence, plausibly there's a complete dictionary. At the level of extracting useful physical results on the bulk side, indeed, there's a lot of work to be done to understand black holes and so forth.
Maybe it's worth asking how strong, when you say plausible, how strongly do we mean plausible? I mean, I think most of us that work in string theory thinks it's extremely plausible. It's not just a question of 75-25. And what do you sort of take as the strongest evidence for that there's not some new thing you have to add?
The argument from the bulk side is basically that you'd like to construct the observables should be diffeomorphs of varying quantities.
Yes.
Right? The only obvious way, the most obvious way to make a diffeomorphs of varying quantity in this ADX context, where we've agreed we're in a superselection sector that tacks down things in the boundaries, because the diffeos don't act on the boundaries, is to attach your observables to the boundary. And really, this story is about observables attached to the boundary.
I don't find that very compelling, I have to say.
One can be talk, for example, once. I can have observables which are totally integrated out, which are constants of motion, and I still cannot express them as local things in the boundary.
Do you have an example of this in
some models, yeah, we can talk about that, yeah. So we cannot really just look at the surface integrals of something in the boundary. I mean, maybe some, extreme. And of course, you can always do Green's functions or something, but that, I think, is not what you have in mind.
Well, there's a choice in the Lorentzian version. There's
a choice of state. Yeah. But we imagine that the boundary theory sort of we're able to access all the states.
Oh, I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
But I think it's true. Everyone would agree that if there is in a quantum gravity theory an observable completely detached from the boundary, then we do know nothing about how to compute an ADS CFT.
What, did you use the word observable?
Yes.
Okay.
If it exists.
It might be non-local on the boundary.
Yeah, that's right.
That'll be okay.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure I agree with your point. There's lots of non-local observables on the boundary.
You
see, I think there must be a stronger argument than that related to the fact that the boundary theory is complete, unitary, something like that. So if you had something new in the bulk, every now and then you take these things we understand and it should turn into the things we don't understand. And that doesn't happen. And so there has to be some kind of complete bulk theory that corresponds to the complete boundary theory. Okay, there could be another kind of bulk theory that, you know, has some agreement. But it seems like there has to be a complete book. Yes.
He said that now 3 times, and I bought it the first 2 times.
I made a mistake.
Yeah, you should have stopped after 2. You know, if we were doing finite dimensional quantum mechanics, I would feel you hand me a Hermitian Hamiltonian, I feel totally confident it could evolve forever.
Right.
But we're doing field theory.
Yeah.
And, you know, what if I push you, what are you really basing your understanding that this Super Yang-Mills theory is, you know, can never evolve to a point where something new is needed? What's the basis of that knowledge about this quantum field theory, that it can't evolve off out of the sort of domain where it's well defined?
It seems the quantum field theory on a compact space.
Well, that's right, but that doesn't. There could be ultraviolet problems.
Yeah, it's like a quantum mechanics. Discrete quantum mechanics.
There are some of the systems that are not particularly this one, okay, in lower dimensions, some variant of this one, say, this is quantum mechanics, okay, 9-matrix quantum mechanics, okay. Want to argue with me about that?
No.
Okay. In fact, this one is a little messy, so boost this up to, a 1+1 dimensional quantum field theory. This is maybe the nice middle ground. That turns out to be the same as, matrix string theory, or it's another version of this. We can push it to a regime where we have no ground to stand on for ultraviolet problems. It's on a finite circle. There's no reason to have infrared problems. And the only thing you could argue about is infinite n, but you don't really have to work at infinite n. And in this kind of thing, you can work at finite n. N equals 10,000 is perfectly. And so everything that we can think about is finite. Okay, so you can put yourself in a really tight box there. Okay. Yeah. The only thing I have there is that we don't understand the Lagrangian quite as well, but that's quite right. I'm more happy. Well, yes. So.
And do we have the singularities in those simpler cases?
Probably. Yeah.
The voltage isn't the same. Only boundary conditions are different.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. This one is particularly easy to handle for a number of reasons. The symmetries, the conformal nature means it's exactly anti-de Sitter, and in some funny way, we understand gauge theories better than we understand quantum mechanics. Okay, so I would rather think about this than large 9 n by n matrices. So, I don't think there's a real hold there. I mean, you know, there are no proofs in the subject. Okay, but I think the Clay Foundation offered $1 million to prove that QCD exists. And I guess at this point, I'm if you don't believe that QCD or, you know, ordinary Yang-Mills theories exist in 4 dimensions, then we'll, you know, it would take something like that. Okay. Now, I don't actually know how to measure levels of confidence. I think mathematical proof is not the way that physicists should measure levels of confidence. And so we need some other. But there's no obvious hole here. Five more minutes, and then I can stop talking, right? Good. Thank you. Thank you, Ralph. Yes.
I want to ask you a question about singularities.
Yes, good.
On this side, so I'm inspired by Ted's questions here. On this side, I've got a gravity theory, and I know gravity is really complicated, as
yes.
Ave was saying. And so I can one might imagine that you can have some, you know, highly nonlinear effect, some interesting collapse. It produces a singularity that, you know, is a thunderbolt, and it shoots out to the boundary.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have said, you know, that would be a real problem. But is your statement that that cannot happen?
Okay, well, we have to describe exactly what thunderbolt means in the boundary.
It's something that's space-like singularity that extends all the way.
Right. So, okay, we'll hear a little bit about this from I guess Thomas will talk about that. In a quantum field theory with a nice well-behaved vacuum, I think it's very general on a compact space at least. The correlators as a function of real time have to be analytic. Okay. If the Hamiltonian is bounded below and everything else is nice, just by inserting sort of complete sets of states, okay. Let me be more precise. Suppose we cut off the ultraviolet, cut off the infrared, then it's a big quantum mechanics, and it's just the sum of exponentials. Okay, there's no way that that system can be produce a non-analytic behavior as a function of time. Okay, so I think the answer is no.
The assertion is that it will never happen.
Right.
Even if NC goes to infinity.
Well, sorry. NC goes to infinity, something could happen. Okay, but then NC goes to infinity, as you know, is zero string coupling. The Planck length is zero. Okay, and I think one of the questions that we are interested in addressing is to find something that when N equals infinity is blows up somehow, pole, whatever, and then ask how it gets resolved as N becomes finite. I think roughly speaking, that is the topic of our conversation. And we have to figure out, what we have to do is figure out in this environment where our hands are tied behind our back to find some signature that does indicate the presence of a singularity.
Sorry, can I
please.
Yeah. You're kind of jumping, you know, string theory, there's kind of two expansions you can do. There's the alpha quantum expansion.
Yes. Yes, you're right.
You're kind of jumping to say that the resolution will require quantum effects of some kind of important to resolve the singularity. Whereas we certainly know some examples of the predict singularity where alpha quantum effects are enough.
I think actually what I said was almost correct there.
I certainly think most singularities require the quantum effect.
No. But I think if I am going to infinity, to get, you want to take L string finite. And in like setups like this, let me just remind the other people in the audience, the ratio of the string length to some reference length, like the ADS scale, is equal to what? Raise that to the fourth power is 1 over G Yang Mills squared N. Okay, in order to make this ratio 0, I still have to take N to infinity. You can't make the Itouf parameter infinite without working at infinite N. Okay, so in order to do something singular, even if it's an issue of alpha prime effect, you still need infinite N. And that in some sense comes from this argument. If things are finite N, cut off in the ultraviolet, cut off in the infrared, there's nothing the system can do. It's quantum. It's a very elaborate quantum mechanics. Okay, so I think, yeah, so I think it applies to what you just said. Okay, what should I do?
I guess we should ask the audience. I mean, it's been an hour. I mean, do people want to just quit, or do people want?
I want to hear the talk.
Yeah, just
one topic. That's the beginning of the talk.
Rock, just something.
I think that's too much to ask.
I mean, there is a natural point to break if we want to have some pita cookies at 3:15,
okay.
Or maybe 3:20, we'll still be there. So why don't you talk for like 15 or 20 minutes, and we'll see where we get, and we can decide if we want to come back at 3:15.
Okay, maybe what I'll try to do, maybe in 15 minutes, it's to sketch the kind of two kind of approaches that I was planning to talk about in a bit of detail. So you just sort of have an advertisement of what one can do, and then we can see if we can go from there. But again, this is important. I think we have to figure out what meeting ground we have. Okay, so let me write down a couple of these formulas. If you have a super Yang-Mills theory, it's described by a Yang-Mills coupling. That's just the gauge coupling. It's an SUN. You have these N by N matrices with an SUN gauge group. And you have, so I guess N is the other parameter. Okay, those are the things that describe the theory. Okay, so we have to translate those into gravity. Well, let me call it gravity, into string theory. So there's a dictionary, okay? And some of the characteristic things in string theory are the size of the bulk curvature, the ADS radius, say. And the ADS radius, it's that formula I wrote down there. So we have a string length, the size of strings, and we have an ADS length, the size of the curvature of the bulk gravity, and we have a string coupling. Those are essentially the parameters right there. So let's write a dictionary between them. Well, in the gauge theory, when you take large N, the way in which things sensibly scale is you hold the Itouf coupling fixed. You imagine holding that fixed. And roughly what happens in things like matrix theory is you take that to infinity. It's that singular limit. Okay, and so now we have to translate these parameters into this side. Well, G string, GA mil squared is just G string. Because the gauge theory, you join and split open strings, that's run by a single power of G string. Okay, and L string over the ADS radius, because of that formula I just wrote, to the fourth power is just given by 1 over the Itauf coupling. So to make L string finite, you make the Itauf coupling larger and larger. So if you suppose you wanted to study zero string coupling, but wanted to study classical string equations at very, very, when the string length was very small compared to the ADS scale, you would study G string equals zero and Itauf coupling getting very large. Okay. So, and if you imagine holding the Itauf coupling fixed, so this ratio between string scale and ADS scale, then you can write G string as equal to N, what do I want to do, over lambda over N. So if N lambda is fixed, the string coupling is essentially 1 over N. Okay, well, in the setup, you see that there's a natural kind of singularity. It's not a space-like singularity. You can describe, which you can imagine making the ADS radius measured in string units going to zero. Okay, and that corresponds, if you take the Itauf coupling going to zero, that's GA mils going to zero, that corresponds to this ratio, the ADS radius over the string radius going to zero, formally, if you believe this formula. Okay, so this is a kind of singularity. It's a static singularity. It's happening everywhere at once. There's no timeline. But it's the way it's quote-unquote resolved is that you take a strongly coupled gauge theory, which has all these dynamics we associate with gravity, and you turn it into a weakly coupled theory of Feynman diagrams. So there's some way that this high curvature limit is described by weakly coupled Feynman diagrams. Okay, so the first set of ideas people talk about in thinking about singularity, space-like singularities in ADS-5, process 5, and in fact, I guess the first set of ideas about this were done in matrix theory, but I think this example captures the essential ingredients here, and because this example is better understood, let me present it here. And I guess I should present some. All right, so I'm going to just set up a bit of work by Das, Michelson, Narayan, and Trivedi, and their most recent paper is one thing about this conference, I usually just write the numerical part because some of you look at GRQC. I realize I have to.
That's all about to get fixed, by the way.
Yeah, so I understand.
Yeah, they had a software delay. March 1.
March 1?
That's the current.
Okay. Okay, so basically what these people did is they found some solution of gravity, or actually supergravity with some fluxes added, where they studied as a function of light cone time. They found some solution where the metric depends on light cone time. And the crucial thing is that the string coupling, as a function of, let's say, x plus, a light cone variable, goes to zero at some reference value, let's say x plus equals zero. And the metric has a light cone singularity at that point as well. And what they said is, look, it's true that this corresponds to e to the dilaton in bulk string language. It's true that this in some sense is this kind of singularity, but we know from this example that taking the coupling to zero is not a very serious thing to do. And so therefore they claim to resolve the singularity of this sort of plane wave as a function of x plus. Well, a couple of things to be said. You might ask, why can't you do this as a function of time? So at a particular time, the coupling goes to zero. That would be a real space-like singularity. Okay. Well, it turns out when you think about that, if you imagine some field theory, and make it a scalar field theory just for the hell of it, plus phi to the fourth. If you rescale this field to eliminate the coupling, just you define some phi equals g times phi twiddle, the derivatives of time acting from the kinetic term produces some effective mass for phi twiddle that blows up when the coupling goes to zero, because these you have effects like phi twiddle squared g dot, that's derivative with respect to time, squared over g squared. So if this thing vanishes linearly, this thing will be constant and this will be going to zero. So you have an infinite mass occurring at a finite time, and that seems like it's genuinely singular. So you have a singularity in the bulk, and it seems like it's singular in the boundary. If you work, it's a function of light cone time, you have like d plus phi, d minus phi, and this will be as a function of x plus. It turns out that because you only have one derivative with respect to plus here, this term vanishes. You have d plus g, d minus g, and that goes to zero. So in fact, this dangerous mass term vanishes, and all you have left is some g squared as a function of x plus phi twiddle fourth. And they claim, look, this is just a theory with a vanishing coupling. You can do Feynman diagrams. What could be better than that? Yes? Well, I think that must mean something about a singularity if you don't know how to continue it. I'm not sure what I mean by time, but I mean by singularity, but it smells something like a singularity if you don't know how to continue.
Well, I just thought you could never want to
do about the profile that you choose.
Right, I suppose you just don't take it literally to zero. You take it very small, so the curvature is extremely large.
You know. You would take a solution of supergravity like that? I mean,
no, I'm just saying you take the field theory, you take the coupling,
yeah.
Vary.
Yes.
Right, then it doesn't quite go to zero, but you know, it's close to zero.
Right. That would not be singular in the bulk, though, either, would it?
Well, what I'm saying is it would look like a singularity from the point of view of GR, because the curvature would grow, you know.
But that's not, that wouldn't be a solution of the GR equations. I mean, you say it's sourced that way. Yeah, well, certainly you can do that, a non-singular source. But the interesting thing here is you find some genuinely singular things in the middle. You claim to be able to figure out what they map to on the boundary. And the behavior on the boundary is non-singular. Now, I must say, I was looking at the equations last night, and I missed something. It turns out, even though this coupling goes to zero at a certain point, x plus, and they claim this is mild, if I read their formulas right, you have g squared of x plus, at small x plus, goes to x plus to the square root of 8. It's true that the coupling is vanishing, but that kind of looks singular to me. I mean, suppose you start at positive x plus, you have many ways to continue to negative x plus. So even though the coupling is small, it's not analytic. You don't have a unique extension. So I'm not sure. They don't discuss this very much, but I what they do is they take the bulk equation, and they try to guess what the boundary field theory is from that. And they make arguments that basically you consider a certain part of the metric and the dilaton on the boundary. Okay, and then this is in fact is the behavior of this thing. And so I am concerned now. I thought that this might be an example of a resolved null singularity, but now I'm not happy.
But don't they have a full function was a big choice?
What do you mean choice?
I mean, the way they set up their system is that they pick their profile, right? So they have a full function with a choice for what profile they pick. So they don't have to pick one that was like...
Well, I think anything that is, I believe anything that is constant at x plus large, past and future, looks like this. And so, and I think this is determined by basic coefficients in the equation. So, yes.
So, people would just back that way. So, what is dimensional space time about?
This metric, I apologize, is a deformation of ADS 5 cross S 5. Okay.
And then the statement is that. If the singularity had occurred,
yes.
it would be
it's null. That's right. The supergravity solution is null.
So it's on S phi cross four-dimensional null surface.
That's right. That's right. No, sorry, a three-dimensional null. Sorry, it's in three-dimensional, in four plus, three plus one-dimensional coordinates, it happens at a particular value of x plus.
Yeah.
Okay, so and then it extends in. So it's four-dimensional null. That's right.
And
the bulk, yeah.
And the delta is five.
That's right, and that just comes along for the ride.
This is like putting a gravitational plane wave.
That's right. It's very similar to that.
And then the last remark that you were making was that because of that, the extension across.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sorry. I hope I'm not misrepresenting their work, but maybe I should leave it as a homework assignment for people to think about this. But I had thought I understood their story, but now I'm not.
The point was that the future was so trivial that there was no evolution at all, and so therefore you wouldn't extend.
Why was there no evolution at all?
I thought the symmetry of the future was so high that literally, at the time of the singularity, the future was a trivial. That was
my understanding. I mean, but the coupling is only zero at a point, and then you have derivatives and stuff that connect you across that. So I don't.
But you have the null symmetry. If it's a plane-fronted wave, you have a null symmetry in the bulk solution.
Yes, that's right.
Null symmetry in
the boundary.
Around the boundary.
That's right.
Okay, so that corresponds to no evolution in a sense.
Well, no, you have one.
Symmetric on timeline on a null.
No, but you have like, you know, you can evolve. It's like a standard null thing. You can evolve in one direction and not in the other.
But evolve just means you pick a profile and that profile is preserved along the null direction, right?
Yeah, although here this thing varies along one of the null coordinates.
I mean the other null direction.
Oh, then it's certainly constant there.
But d by dx minus is a killing vector, right?
Yeah, but that's right. So that's not an issue.
But it's a null line. And you can imagine that one evolves in that null direction instead of the time-like direction, and then things don't evolve.
But then things are singular initially.
Yeah, right. Well, they are. that's what it means when you build the singularity into a plane-fronted wave. We've both done this.
Okay. So maybe what I should say, you know, and just as usual, I only did half of what I wanted to do, but. Maybe that's going to be a scale invariant statement. Is that there are, you know, interesting situations in supergravity that you can extend out to the bulk, and they correspond to variations of coupling constants in the bulk. Roughly speaking, these profiles are not normalizable with respect to this reference profile, and so they actually change the coupling constants in the boundary theory. And you can ask whether that's a dangerous thing you've done or not a dangerous thing. Are there certain variations of couplings in the boundary theory that you can understand? All right, so that's one strategy. And the next strategy that I'll talk about for 30 seconds is to consider a situation where you don't change the asymptotics here at all. Okay, you study what we would call normalizable excitations, things just happening in the bulk. And there, the only good natural, I guess if you believe cosmic censorship, the only kinds of singularities you can find are behind horizons that are, roughly speaking, black holes. We understand black holes, at least to some extent, in this geometry. They basically correspond to a hot boundary theory. You can collide stuff together and make something ergodized. And then the question is, can you study the singularity in the black hole here? It seems that you have complete information. Okay, you get, for instance, the entropy, at least in simpler contexts, exactly right. Can you take the data you have outside the horizon and somehow do this trick that we learned about in school of falling through the horizon and see what you see as you approach the singularity? And that's quite a trick. Okay. Now, by using, picking very special situations and using analyticity, some of us, and I guess, have looked at this situation. It seems you can get a clear but rather subtle signature of the singularity in correlators of this boundary gauge theory. And then the question is, what happens to them when you relax, you make the string length finite, or you make the string coupling finite, this signature is a kind of pole. What happens to it? Okay, and we don't know, but that's a question that it's at least the start of being able to phrase this question in this dual language. What you want to do is you want to find something in the boundary gauge theory that reflects the singularity in a limit where you're studying gravity, turning off the string lengths, turning off string couplings, and ask what happens to it when you work at, you know, at finite parameters, finite n, finite everything else. Okay. And the beginnings of that have been done. Extending that to really answer the question is just in its infancy. Okay, so I'll stop there.